Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, March 19th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyairam.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Studio 7 is going out to Zimbabwe on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe receives $35.2 million from the West to assist in the rehabilitation of power, water and sanitation facilities in several municipalities countrywide.
Our infrastructure depreciated immensely during the economic decline period. Resultantly, we experienced the cholera outbreak in 2008 and also significant power shortages.
Female lawmakers are demanding the expansion to rural communities of the program that provided them with free cervical cancer screening at Parliament this week.
And Harare Town Clerk Tendai Mahachi faces contempt of Parliament charges for repeatedly disrespecting the Parliamentary Local Government Portfolio Committee over the city's salary schedule.
Western donors today provided Zimbabwe with $35.2 million to assist in the rehabilitation of power, water and sanitation facilities in several municipalities countrywide, despite President Robert Mugabe's persistent attacks on the West for its criticism of his administration. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Speaking at the launch today of the second phase of the project, initiated in 2010 during the time of the unity government, Deputy Finance Minister Samuel Undenge said the resources availed by the Western donors under the Zimbabwe Multi-Donor Trust Fund, or ZIM Fund, will benefit more than 5 million people in major cities and other small towns such as Wange, Redcliffe, Rua, and Chitungwiza. Of this amount, $19.8 million will be channeled towards the rehabilitation of electricity transformers, while the remaining $15.4 million will be used to increase water supply systems and sewer reticulation.
The Phase 2 Urgent Water Supply and Sanitation Rehabilitation Project focuses on restoring water and waste water treatment capacity by giving emphasis on improving both the water and sewerage network performance in four local authorities, namely Harare, Chitungwiza, Rua, and Redcliffe, targeting a population of 1.9 million people. As you may be aware, our infrastructure depreciated immensely during the economic decline period. Resultantly, we experienced the cholera outbreak in 2008 and also significant power shortages.
Deputy Energy Minister Munacho Mutezo said the power and water rehabilitation programs were part of the country's economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIM Asset.
This package involves the supply and installation of over 500 distribution transformers, laying of 17 kilometers underground cables, as well as erection of 345 kilometers of overhead power distribution lines countrywide to the different local authorities or power consumption centers.
Deputy Minister for Environment, Water and Climate, Simon Musanu, said the provision of enough clean water in several communities through this project would result in the eradication of waterborne diseases.
Following the devastating cholera outbreak, rapid improvements and interventions were required if the country was to avoid another disaster. In this context, donors, development agencies and the government joined forces to work in a unique partnership to invest in urban water supply and sanitation rehabilitation. This project is intended to reduce water pollution caused by the discharge of untreated effluent into our lakes, rivers and groundwater. Furthermore, the reduction of the pollution of raw water sources will result in the reduction of water production costs, as less chemicals will be required for the treatment of the raw water.
A representative of the Western donors and German ambassador to Zimbabwe, Ulrich Kluckner, said the West will continue to work with Zimbabwe in uplifting the lives of its people.
We, Germany, together also with our Australian partners and colleagues, have also a bilateral water project where we help in some of the towns. These are first steps, and they are improving the situation considerably, but this is an issue as well as energy that has to be taken up on the national level. There has to be a grand design, and that has to be implemented, and it needs much more money than Germany or Australia could contribute. So we think this is the right way to proceed via ZIM funds.
Countries that contributed towards the ZIM fund include Germany, Australia, Norway, Denmark, and Britain. This assistance comes despite strained relations between Harare and the West over the so-called targeted sanctions. President Robert Mugabe uses every available opportunity to verbally attack the West for its alleged interference in the country's internal politics. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, some Bulawayo residents say the local authority should scrap all water rationing penalties of up to $30 they accumulated when the city implemented tight water restriction measures. Ward 2 Councillor Sitabile Mataka says most residents say they cannot raise money to pay these penalties. The Bulawayo City Council lifted its water rationing program last month, citing significant inflows into the city's six dams due to heavy rains that fell in most parts of the country. But Mataka says residents continue paying fines despite the lifting of the tight water rationing measures.
The water situation in Bulawayo these days is very good. The problem that we used to have, people were complaining that the water is coming to the taps dirty and it wasn't clean. All that is now gone because we've got more water and there's no more load shedding. To cut water for 24 hours, 72 hours, 48 hours, it's no more there.
But at the end of the day, Councillor Mataka, we are told that water rationing is still there.
Yes, it's there. The water rationing is still there because there are certain liters which the household is being given. And if you misuse that water, you have to pay a fine.
So how much are people paying in terms of these penalties?
It depends on how much they use.
And then when we talk about the long-term focus for the city of Bulawayo, what are you looking at?
We've got water reserved. When there's no water, then we use that one.
That was Bulawayo Ward 2 Councillor Sitabile Mataka speaking to Studio 7. In Harare, residents are still experiencing serious water shortages due to burst pipes and lack of money to upgrade facilities. Southerton Councillor Peter Moyo says the water crisis is getting worse in the capital city.
Well, we have a very serious problem in terms of supplying water to our residents because I think residents still remember that in 2008 we used to have about 300 megaliters per day, but currently we are having about 620 megaliters per day. This is a very serious problem. That's why we went as far as borrowing money from China, Exim Bank. So the Chinese engineers are here in Zimbabwe. They are trying to work very hard to make sure that maybe we can supply residents with the water which is also clean. And the other problem that we're having is the pipes are bursting on a daily basis. They are too old. We tried in 2009-2010 to replace the old pipes. But unfortunately, because of the magnitude of the money which is needed to repair those pipes, we installed the replacement of pipes. What will it take, Mr. Moyo, to actually rectify this situation? Well, it needs the investor confidence first and foremost. Our government needs to put their hands together and stop this kind of corruption things which is happening so that investor confidence comes back to Zimbabwe. And then we construct them from Moda Dam. Then the Moda Dam will start supplying and the other dams, the surrounding dams, they will start supplying Harare with water. Without that investor confidence, we will remain dreaming and dreaming and we won't solve this problem of water.
That was Southerton Councillor Peter Moyo speaking to Studio 7 from Harare.
The Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Local Government, led by Mutasa South lawmaker and ZANU-PF member Irene Zindi, is said to be considering charging Harare Town Clerk Tendai Mahachi with contempt of Parliament for repeatedly allegedly frustrating the committee's efforts to verify the salary structure for top executives at the local authority. Twice, the committee demanded Mahachi's payslip to verify reports that he was earning too much money and also getting an entertainment allowance, yet council was paying separately for most of his guests entertained at his residence. The committee also wants to probe the alleged huge allowances that the council is paying to a few managers at the local authority when workers have gone for months without pay and service delivery plummeting on the other hand. Lawyer Tawanda Juarara of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says Parliament has the powers to charge uncooperative people like Mahachi.
Contempt of Parliament is a procedure whereby Parliament marks its displeasure by actually bringing somebody before a hearing and charging him with an offence of being either contemptuous or violating the parliamentary procedures. In this particular case, Parliament is saying that it is entitled to question and bring an individual to actually give them information. And if that person refuses to give them that particular information, they can be charged with contempt of Parliament. They are neither civil nor criminal proceedings. Our Supreme Court has said that contempt of Parliament or Parliament sitting as a court is a court in its own right and is allowed to do that to a person who has actually violated their procedures or refused to comply with their orders.
But Mr. Mahachi in this case is saying that he has given the information that Parliament is demanding to the office of the President.
That is not enough. Mahachi needs to understand the concept of separation of power. Parliament can actually, in its own right, request certain information from citizens which it believes is necessary for them to make decisions or policy considerations or acts of Parliament. What it needs in this situation is for Mahachi to understand the concept of separation of powers and that Parliament has the right to request that information in its own right. And him having given that salary schedule to the president or a minister or alternatively the judiciary is not enough and does not satisfy the requirement that Parliament has placed before. What also people need to understand is that his compliance has been defective. He has been asked to give the salary that he and other individuals were earning before his salary was slashed. That information is there. He had that schedule, and that is what he needs to provide Parliament in order to satisfy the parliamentary request.
That was Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights member Tawanda Juarara in Harare. Meanwhile, Cabinet yesterday capped salaries for top managers at government firms and parastatals to $6,000 following the Salarygate scandal. For analysis, Blessing Zulu turned to Japhet Moyo of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions.
Oh, these are newspaper stories. There are a lot of, legalities to be followed if you need to deal with other people's contracts. I think that's our first reaction. Why list the idea is good, but the story itself, I think, is lacking a lot of clarity. How are they going to do that? Is it going to apply to new entrants? Because there are people sitting in those positions there, some of them properly acquired those perks through negotiations, and they do have contracts. Contracts are going to last for years. So I think the government might have an intention, but I think they are putting the cart before the horse by merely going to the press and announce these things without telling us whether they are going to put a legislation to that effect.
How best can the gap be addressed that you are talking about between the managers and the shop floor workers?
The people at the lower level, obviously, they do have collective bargaining arrangements. The people at the highest level also, when they get these contracts, they are given by either boards. And I think that's where the game is not properly played, because those people who manage to negotiate those conditions of employment don't look at the bigger picture. For instance, the size of our economy, can our economy carry this? Are the companies or the parastatals themselves liquid enough to carry that cost? It will appear like all these things are not put into picture when these people are given contracts.
That was Japhet Moyo of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions speaking with Blessing Zulu. Blessing also spoke with Munyara Dzigwisai of the International Socialist Organization on the cabinet decision to curb the salaries for senior executives within government, parastatals and firms.
Generally, if you take it in the context of the new constitution provides values and principles that govern the administration of the state and local authorities and companies which are controlled and owned by the state, sections 194 to 196. And one of the values is that there must be economic, efficient use of national resources. And clearly, when you have a CEO who earns $500,000, $30,000, $40,000, when they are failing to provide services, when they are failing to provide water, when they are failing to provide their workers their wages, then it clearly would be unconstitutional. If it was obviously in the normal common thing, an employer's salary may not be unilaterally reduced by an employer, but these are public employees, and their salaries normally should be approved by the Minister of Finance once their board has given them. From what it appears, it seems that those kind of processes were not done. This was a connivance between thieving board members and thieving parastatal bosses without the necessary approval.
What about in those instances where the proper channels in negotiating salaries were followed?
Where, of course, the approval was given by the minister, then you legally cannot remove it unilaterally like that.
That was Munyara Dzigwisai of the International Socialist Organization speaking with Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Female lawmakers are demanding the expansion to rural communities of the program that provided them with free cervical cancer screening at Parliament this week. The parliamentarians today agreed most women in the rural communities know little, if anything, about disease raising the need for the government to spread the program's reach. Ivan Chifera has details from the capital.
Speaking at a press conference just before the end of the three-day exercise jointly organized by Population Services International PSI and the Women's Parliamentary Caucus, Deputy Chair of the Caucus, Paulina Mpariwa, said the program meant to raise awareness about cervical cancer was successful, adding it should be rolled out to all constituencies, especially rural communities. She said the Women's Caucus has made arrangements with the PSI to carry out free cervical cancer screening throughout the country.
In an urban setup, it's much better, but I think we are also encouraging that they have to actually put some mobile testing centers, which we have agreed with PSI. And within, I think, a short period of time, they will have to be mobile, access the communities wherever they are.
Speaking at the end of the screening exercise, National Assembly member from Matabele North Province, Skanyiswe Mpofu, said it is important for women to know their status as early detection can save lives. Bemoaned the unavailability of screening facilities in rural areas, saying in cases where hospitals are well equipped, they are often too far away from most people. Act 2.
I wish they could take their program to Matabele North, because we have got so many in the rural, many women in the rural areas who are not aware of this program, of the cervical cancer screening program. So it's very important that as a leader of the people, I should go out there and tell the people about cervical cancer and why it's important that people should be screened.
Industry and Commerce Deputy Minister Shiratizo Mabua, who lost a sister-in-law to cervical cancer, is concerned about the lack of knowledge about the disease in a constituency.
This is a free service, and this is why I say that this free service should also cascade to the woman who is in the village and who is less advantaged than women who are in urban areas, in my view. What I was thinking was that perhaps if it is possible, we could organize mobile clinics to go around and visit our 10 clinics. Just have a special day that could be dedicated for women's screenings. Women and girls who are already sexually active, if they can come out.
Mupariwa said by lunchtime, 45 lawmakers from the lower house and 42 parliamentary staff had been screened for the disease, adding more would undergo the exercise at a later date. Lawmakers displayed their test results, but PSI officials and parliament clinic staff refused to disclose whether there were any found to be at risk, saying they were confidential. Cervical cancer is cancer that starts in the cervix, which is the lower part of the uterus or womb, and it usually develops slowly. The condition can be detected by a pap smear or screening and is 100% treatable. Most women who are diagnosed with cervical cancer today have not had regular pap smears, or they have not followed up on abnormal pap smear results. Almost all cervical cancers are caused by HPV, human papilloma virus, a common virus that is spread through sexual intercourse. A woman's sexual habits and patterns can increase the risk of developing cervical cancer. Risk sexual practices include having sex at an early age, having multiple sexual partners, having a partner or many partners who are active in high-risk sexual activities. Risk factors for cervical cancer include not getting the HPV vaccine, being poor, and a weakened immune system. Most of the time, early cervical cancer has no symptoms, but some women may experience abnormal bleeding between periods after intercourse or after menopause, or periods that become heavier and last longer than usual. About 1,800 women are diagnosed with cervical cancer every year, and 1,200 of them lose their lives. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
Members of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe are advocating for a national teacher strike if the government fails to effect their agreed salary increments in April. Members have been hinting in discussions on their union's Facebook page that they may down tools if the increments are as promised by Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa and President Robert Mugabe fail to materialize. Union members are convinced the government has enough money to pay them, adding the only problem is that Harare has got its priorities wrong. The government, following discussions with union representatives in January, initially promised to give civil servants increments in February, but later said it would only be able to do so in April. But the agreement was not written on paper, worrying many government employees. PTUZ member and Harare provincial chairman Charles Mbukandarikwa says what is also worrying them is the lack of unity in the Apex Council. He speaks with reporter Joanga Kandemiri.
When the government came about last year, they promised us to give us an increment before the end of the year. And we were delighted to hear that. But to our surprise, the year ended with nothing coming to our pockets. And then we thought probably they needed more time. So when this year began, they again promised to give us an increment, and they said by February we would have it. But come February, they changed the date and said the money was now going to come in April. And now we are hearing rumors that they are talking about June, which is not a very good thing, because we had anticipated that by now we would be better paid people. Imagine having a salary of below the PDL. We are talking of the PDL, which is a basic need for anyone who is going to work, but the government is failing to meet its part of the bargain.
You have issued threats of a strike in the event that come April, the government does not honor its promise. How do you plan to do this?
members on the ground are rearing to go because of the change of goalposts by the government. Now everyone is clear that the government is not sincere in what it promises its workers because they are not owning up. They are not coming to terms with what they have said for themselves, which we see as a total failure. Now, if it is failure should be just called that it's failure. And if they are failing, then we are saying, are there no people in Zimbabwe who can take this country forward?
Are you in agreement with fellow unions over this salary increment issue?
As general members on the ground, we are agreed. But when it comes to the Apex Council now, there are some leaders in some of the unions who are sympathetic to government. But I think before they sympathize with the government, they should look at the workers' plight first because they represent workers.
That was PTUZ Harare Provincial Chairman Charles Mbugandari Kwam.
And in sports news, the Zimbabwe cricket team this afternoon bounced back into contention for a place in the Super 10 stage of the 2020 World Cup. Reporter Michael Kariati gives us the story from Harare.
The team, which was on the verge of elimination following a 3-wicket defeat on the opening day by Ireland, this afternoon beat the Netherlands by 5 wickets to bounce back into contention for that vital place in the Super 10 of the 2020 World Cup that starts in Bangladesh Friday. The Zimbabweans, though, needed a final delivery from Vusibanda to end on 146 for 5 after the Netherlands had finished on 140 for 5. After winning the toss and electing to bat. Captain Brendan Taylor was in superb form as he hit 49 runs and was well complimented by Hamilton Masakadza, who plundered 43 runs, with Sean Williams also impressive on 26. The Zimbabwean team, though, will need a bit of luck to make it through to the next stage, hoping that Ireland suffer a dramatic collapse at the hands of the Netherlands on the last day of play and they win heavily against Minos, the United Arab Emirates. Zimbabwe has one win. The Netherlands have also won once, but Ireland were expected to remain top of the table as they were facing Little United Arab Emirates in the other group match of Group 2 later today. But one of the Zimbabwean fans, Joseph Kaundera, thinks Zimbabwe is still with a chance as a game or a tournament is not over until it is really over.
They are not yet out until they are out.
The Zimbabwean team faced a lot of hurdles on their way to the 2020 World Cup qualifiers in Bangladesh, including only 2 weeks of training after going on strike due to non-payment of bonuses and salaries. But still, assistant coach Steve Mangongo is hoping that the team will put that aside and qualify for the Super 10 stage, where the best cricket teams in the world play.
We are worried about the lack of game time. We are banking on that they will be able to go into the matches and able to perform under pressure.
But from the outset, Zimbabwe's chances look slim after that Ireland defeat. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Just as a reminder to our listeners, please stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Gibbs and Blessing will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the salary gate scandal in Cabinet's move to cap salaries for top managers in parastate house and other government firms.
Call or text us at the following number, 001-202-465-0318, so that we can call you back and have you participate in our program.
And now we recap today's top stories.
Zimbabwe receives $35.2 million from the West to assist in the rehabilitation of power, water and sanitation facilities in several municipalities countrywide.
Female lawmakers are demanding the expansion of rural communities of the program that provided them with free cervical cancer screening at Parliament this week.
And the Zimbabwe cricket team bounces back into contention for a place in the Super 10 stage of the 2020 World Cup.
That's our broadcast this evening. Join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages. And visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. You can send us an email at studio7@voanews.com. This is Sandra Nyaira. Good night.
Now, stay.